I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Cindy Baldwin.
And you're listening to the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework peoples. No stitch hour tonight, because I won't be home. So no stitch hour tonight. We'll be back next week. Sunday's guest, we had so much fun, David McCaskill.
That's exciting.
He's a blast. He's funny. Yeah, I think we laughed through half of it. It was, you just turn him on and let him go. It was great.
Cool.
Have you met him?
No, I have a fair number of his patterns.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he's done a lot. He talked about when he had a shop, and he called it the Stitch Clubhouse or something like that. But anyway, what you did, it was like being a member of a country club.
Ooh.
And you paid an annual fee. I think it was $110. And then he had a building. And then in the back was a room that was all fitted out with floor stands and chairs and, you know, a little kitchenette and that kind of thing. And you could just come in and stitch because you were a member of the club.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, it really struck me because when I was doing marine aquariums, I had an idea that if it didn't cost a fortune, which it would, to rent a storefront and set up all my aquariums, because I had like 300 gallons worth of water at the time and wanted more.
Wow.
And set up the aquariums and then just have chairs, you know, and a refrigerator and whatnot, and just have it so that people could come in and just hang out. Mm-hmm. And that's basically what he created. And of course, he had a shop to go with it with threads and everything, which, you know, why not?
Right.
But just, you know, just the thought of that, to have a place, you know, when $110 over a year, you know, I'd pay that in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
And then you could just drop in, you know, whatever the hours were. And, I mean, tremendous commitment on his part because, I mean, you got to be open a lot. But, you know, I just thought that was such a great idea. Whether you sold threads or not is immaterial. Just to have a space where people could come and, you know, some cold beverages and a coffee pot, you know, I thought it was a great idea.
Yeah. Nobody does that these days.
No. And now there's storefronts everywhere that are empty. I bet you could get one for, you know, not a lot.
Yeah. Wouldn't surprise me.
But, you know, I mean, at $100, I don't know how many people do you'd have to have. I don't know. Yeah, that'd be pure speculation. It'd depend on the city and everything else. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, a couple hundred people that would pay that. Yeah. Why not?
So, yeah.
I just thought it was a great idea, you know, in terms of place to go stitch. Because people pay a chunk of money to go to retreats and stuff for just a weekend. And if you had that in your area, you know, and then, of course, you could have local EGA or ANG chapters could meet there. And
Yeah,
so.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. I mean, that would be. Yeah. So that got my wheels spinning. I probably won't act on it, but got my wheels spinning. Because, you know, it's a time commitment.
If we were younger and had a pile of money.
those two things. And those two things never go together.
No, they never go together.
Yeah, you're young. You got no money. You get older. You got a little bit of money, but you really just don't have the desire. You know?
Yeah.
No,
too much work.
Yeah, we Marg and I talked, it's been a few years now, about buying a needlepoint or needlework shop. Because it just thought, you know, I wouldn't mind spending my days doing that. And then it's one of those, hey, let's look into it. And then as the days go by and you start thinking about the lifestyle. And no, mm-hmm. No, you got to want to really bad.
Yeah. And you know what? I was talking with Nancy Holla this morning about the last podcast with, I forget her first name. the new her new shop, Ben-Hayun.
Oh yeah, Shayna Ben-Hayun. Yeah.
Shayna. Yeah, and you know how she was, how cool that was that she was, you know, opening a shop and focusing on the younger crowd and, you know, trying to meet them halfway. And we both really enjoyed that podcast.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. She's fun. Yeah.
But it's a huge, like she said, it's a huge amount of work.
Yeah.
And a terrific expense up front to stock beds and canvases and, you know, outside of the building.
So, yeah, you know, what came to me about a shop, I mean, I admire people who've had shops for a long time. You know, that's amazing. But, you know, if you had someone to do the books and do the ordering, you know, I think that you could make it work. But to me, the ordering is the...
Run the website.
Oh, yeah, that too. Yeah. Yeah. The ordering to me, though, that's the ominous one. Because it's like, you know, it's like any of us. You think you got all the... You know you have all these threads and you sit down to do a project. And there's always one you don't have. And, you know, magnify that in a shop by 1,000, you know.
Well, and so many new shops, you know, they start out with a minimum line of thread types and colors. And then, you know, as people come in and they need a new, another color or different thread, you know, they'll add them in. But doing it that way, you never really have probably everything in one particular line.
No.
But if people aren't using it, you don't want to be stuck with a color or a thread that people aren't using.
Right.
And then there's minimums, you know, the thread companies require you to buy, you know, a box or
right.
Have skeins or spools or whatever. You can't just buy one.
No. No, I had that. There was a counted canvas thing that required a thread, and I went to the shop. And of course, they didn't carry it. I said, "Well, can you order it?" And the owner was obviously having a bad day. She just goes, "Oh, these designers." She said, "You know that particular brand." She says, "I got to order a minimum of 12 spools." And she says, "So I'll order 12 spools, and I'll be sitting here with 11 of them." I'm sorry, you know. So she ordered it, but I felt really bad, you know, because she just didn't want to order them. And I took my one spool, but, you know what, I don't need any more. And right. Yeah. And I know there's, you know, I don't know. I never went back to see if she got rid of the rest of them. I wasn't going to bring up the sore subject. But yeah, and I'm sure that every shop in the country could give you a nice couple of boxes of stuff that were just that. Well, I had to order 10. I have 8 left and no call for them. And
yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, if the designers don't use the threads, then the threads go away.
Yeah.
Right. Because nobody's using them. So why should they make them?
Right.
They can't sell.
Yep.
So it's a vicious circle.
Yeah. Yeah. But that, you know, then on the positive side of running a shop, you know, what fun to have people come in all day and help them with their projects. And, you know, if you have workshops and those kinds of things, you know, that,
yeah.
I mean, that's fun stuff. People enjoying the hobby and they come to your store to do it. But yeah, just somebody to order and do the books. Yeah.
Yep. Agreed.
Yeah. But I thought here in St. Louis, we drive around and there's so many strip mall storefronts that are empty. And you got to believe you could go to the landlord and say, "Look, you know, I'll give you, you know, $500 a month and occupy one of your places." And you know, mm-hmm. it's better than what you're getting now, you know. And But even so, heating, air conditioning, yeah, you know, you at 500, you'd clear $1,000 in a hurry. And, yeah, you'd have to have a bunch of people paying money to get it to cover, get it covered. So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't think there's any good answer.
No, I don't have the energy, so never mind.
Yeah, me too. Or the money, so.
Never mind. Yeah. Oh, yeah, money aside, I just don't have the energy. Yeah, so. Yeah. No.
I'd rather sit and stitch.
Yeah. That line, the Gay Ann Rogers line. No, that's cutting into my stitching time. Forget it. No. Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. Yep.
Definitely.
So speaking of the Gay Ann Rogers Saint-Tropez project sponsored by Needle in a Haystack, Kathy Ray, who keep her in your thoughts and prayers because she and her husband have COVID, that project, where are you at? What you doing?
So I picked up, I've already picked my colors, and they are based on Karen's yellow fever, which is purple and yellow and peach, and with a little bit of, in looking at what Gay Ann did and some of the other photos for her model stitchers and the ones that are showing up already on the Stitch Along Facebook page, what I've chosen has much more color in it than a lot of people's. And yours does too. Now, Beth's is a little more, I wouldn't say monochrome, but the colors are more analogous.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what I want? They're closer together. They're not, you know. So it was interesting. I pulled I'm going to do it on lavender canvas, but I didn't have a small piece of lavender. So I picked a small piece of sage green canvas, which the colors look fine on it. But so I started stitching that center part, and I'll send you some photos.
Okay.
And the color variations are fairly long. And so I just cut a long piece of the watercolors that had all the purple and yellow and orange and green in it, and started stitching those center diagonal stitches.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that it worked out, I was able to get two sides done with one thread. So then I just picked up the other side, the other thread, and did the same two sides, only opposite.
Mm-hmm.
The two corners are mostly peach, and two corners are mostly lavender.
Oh, okay.
So it worked out perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And then just, started stitching the rest of it and finding that I needed to change some of the colors that I had chosen originally.
Uh-huh.
Which, I kind of expected.
Yeah.
So, that wasn't, and I will carry those changes over to the purple, the lavender canvas too, I think.
Oh, so you are going to do it on lavender canvas too then?
I'll do the full size one on the lavender.
Okay.
I just didn't have I wanted to stitch one of the ornaments first.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And I didn't want to cut a smaller piece of the lavender because I didn't have extra lavender.
Yeah.
To do. But I had extra sage green.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm stitching the ornament on. Well, so what I was going to say is when you and Beth did your unboxing and you guys were talking about the threads that were the same color as your background, you need that. Have you read the directions yet?
Yeah, well, Beth and I had a discussion afterwards, and that's exactly the instructions, is the threads need to be the same color as the background. So,
Yeah, and some of it is done. Some of it is, one of them is what the nun stitch on the ornaments, but the nun stitch isn't on the full size project. So I don't know what she's doing with the colors that kind of match the background.
Yeah.
I haven't gotten that.
That was a prime example of read the instructions all the way through.
Well, and I've read them. I found that I've read them several times.
Mm-hmm.
Now, to, you know, just make sure I know what color goes where, and deciding if that's the color I really want to use there. The center of those long diagonal stitches, which is right on the center point of the canvas for the large ornament, is supposed to be in your contrast color, which I forget what I was going to use for that. It didn't work.
Oh,
I know I was going to use peach. But each quadrant is peach. And so I didn't want to use peach in the center. So I switched to yellow.
Oh, okay.
Because there's not that much yellow showing. So, you know, when you have a highly, highly variegated, highly colored, over dyed, you know, you might find yourself making some changes to get a real contrast for that thread that's supposed to be a contrast color.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like I said, it's just fun playing.
Right. Well, and yeah, I mean, that's the object of the thing. It's like the stuff that the over dye that I'm using has very strong colors in it. And I'll just be curious to see, as I try to get it without leaving the microphone, and I'm just going to go get it. But, you know, it has some very strong colors and very, very different. So, yeah, I'm curious to see what I end up doing. But that's, you know, that's the whole point of this project, is to go through that mental exercise. So,
right, to experiment.
Yeah.
And, you know, starting out of your stash is, you know, what I did was I have a box full of watercolors.
Yeah.
Just started going through that, you know, to see what kind of grabbed me. And it was yellow fever. There were a couple of other ones that I pulled out that I, you know, kind of thought about, but yellow fever was the one that I decided I wanted to work with.
Yeah. Watercolors is a fun thread to buy at a shop.
Huh?
You can just stand there and because the colors are so good and the combinations.
Yeah.
And I have a decent handful of skeins of watercolors that I've just bought with no purpose or need whatsoever. I just like the combinations. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty colors.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, I'll take a couple of these. You never know. I might use it. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think we've talked about this before. You know, if you are changing the colors on a project and you really don't know what colors to use, start with an over dye, because your colors are all there for you.
Yep. Yeah, they all go together. Yeah. If you want to see people making progress through this, Gayanne Rogers, her Facebook Stitch Along group, a lot of people are posting there, and you can see that. But a couple people here in the last couple of days have posted pictures where they've used your trick of wrapping the over dye around a pencil just to see what the colors look like. It's a pretty effective little tool.
Yeah, it works for me.
Yeah. Yeah, you really see. I have not done that with the Bravo that I'm using, but you can see immediately what the colors are and how much in each length. It's a good trick. Good trick. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, yeah. So we're plugging away now. There's now two videos. So Beth and I did a video on the FiberTalk YouTube channel, and I'll put them on a page at the WeTalkFiber.com. So people can find them there. And then Beth has put them together on YouTube so that they're, and we'll add to that. But there's two videos now. One is Beth and me, Beth and me, opening, got to get the grammar right, opening our colors, our packages from Kathy at Needle and Haystack. And then the other one is the last Wednesday show, where I led people through the process of mounting canvas on stretcher bars. Yeah, so those two videos are available, and then we'll be adding other videos as we go along. But going through that, you know, I mean, I got everything lined up, and going through that, and when I got done, and holy smokes, that took a long time. But it really, it seems arduous and involved, but it really isn't that much.
No, but when you're explaining every step to people, it does take more time. You know, we do it. We've been doing it for a long time. You know, we kind of do it without thinking. But when you start thinking, okay, I've got to explain why I'm doing each step.
Yeah.
Then it does take a while.
Yeah.
And watching the comments, you know, it kind of looked to me like it was kind of new to a lot of people.
Yeah, I was feeling good as I was going through it, because I started out, and mentally it was, okay, I apologize, folks. I got to go through all these little details for those who have never done it before. And I'm thinking of people like you sitting out there going, oh, geez, you know. But then, yeah, the comments started rolling in, and it was clear that it was helping a lot of people. So I felt pretty good about that part.
Yeah, definitely. So what happened when you cut the selvage off? Did that make a difference?
A little. Okay, so yeah. I cut the selvage off, and then I let it sit for a couple of days. And it did relax, because if I put the square on the horizontal thread, by the time I got 6 inches up from the the angle of the square, it was 4 or 5 threads off. And when I cut the selvage off and tugged on it a little bit and let it sit, it relaxed down to just being out of square by 2 or 3 threads. So that selvage was holding the thing out of square quite a bit. But then it doesn't look like it's going to relax anymore. Mm-hmm. So, which kind of frustrates me. I don't recall needlepoint canvas being out of square as much as the last couple of pieces I've purchased. And maybe it's just me.
I've never paid any attention to it. So what I do, mark the center of the edges so that, you know, as you pointed out, the Evertights have the centers marked. On the other stretcher bars, I mark the center. I just mark them,
mm-hmm.
you know, with a pencil or a pen, not a pencil, because I don't want to rip off. And then I once I get my stretcher bars square, then I try to line those marks on the canvas up with the marks on the stretcher bars without changing the squareness of the stretcher bars, if that makes sense. Because it's especially the regular stretcher bars, it's easy to push on them and nudge them out of square.
Yeah.
So if you're pulling on the canvas and trying to get it square, you can unsquare the stretcher bars if you're not watching what you're doing.
Right. Yeah, that's why putting those little pieces of metal angle pieces on,
right.
That really, yeah, that locks it right down. It can't move. But, yeah, it's easy to get that.
That would really let you tug on your canvas then and get it lined up.
Right. Yeah, you can. Yeah, you're not going to move those metal pieces. They're not moving.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But, and I don't know, maybe I obsess over it, but I really want that needlepoint canvas as square as possible when I start, because I just don't want a lot of extensive blocking on the back end. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe I'm just being ridiculous, but, once I have it all stitched, I don't want somebody having to then spray it and stretch it and...
I don't think most framers are going to do that. They're going to pin it, you know, and get it square. If it's really way out, I don't know if most framers are going to want to actually get it wet to block it.
Yeah.
They might give it back to you and say, you know, you do. I guess there's some liability there.
Oh yeah.
If the threads started to bleed.
Right.
So yeah, I mean, I think it's good to make sure it's as straight as you can make it, but then you know, they're doing the same thing that we're doing on stretcher bars, only they're doing it on foam core.
Right. Right.
And just manipulating and stretching a little bit to make it be square, because it's going to be noticeable if it's not with, you know, with the mat or with the frame.
Well, I'm not using this piece for Saint-Tropez because I'm using the Congress cloth linen that Kathy got. So this piece that I was using for demonstration, I mean, I've yanked on it enough that I probably wouldn't stitch with it anyway. So I have some blocking. It's actually real stiff foam, but blocking board. And so I'm going to just experiment with it because, you know, it's just pretty much scrap now anyway. I'm going to experiment with to see how much it takes to square it up just by pinning it on the board and then just lightly misting it with water and just see what I can do there. Because if it doesn't take a whole lot and I can get it squared up, then, you know, I'll have learned something. But I'm real hesitant to do very much with the canvas because I don't want the starch to get all washed out, and then I'm stitching on flimsy canvas.
Right. You might try steam.
Yeah.
Instead of water.
Like just a steam iron and just punch the button and make it shoot steam out.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
That's going to penetrate the fibers a little better than water will, or at least quicker. It'll be quicker than water would be, just a spray mist.
Yeah. Okay. I'll give that a try. But yeah, I think it's worth the exercise. You know, I mean, it's a piece of scrap, so I don't care. But if I could get that to be reasonably stiff and square, then I'll have learned something out of it. So then it might be worth stitching on. Who knows?
Well, and it's a good sized piece. You could use that as your doodle cloth.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
You know, if you didn't want to use any of the linen Congress cloth as a doodle cloth, you can, although your threads are not going to look the same on the 18 count as they would on the 24 count.
Yeah, they'll be a little thin. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So.
Or use it for a doodle cloth for something else.
Yep. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I won't throw it away. Yeah, exactly that. Certainly good doodle cloth for anything. Yeah. So, yeah, when last Sunday, Tracy Franklin, one of the things that she talked about, because she has a studio, she has just a bunch of, she's using slate frames because she's all embroidery and gold work and everything. And she described her studio having several frames set out, and at least one of them is basically a giant doodle cloth, so that when she has an idea, she just goes there and just throws it down. Just stitches it in. And it really got me thinking about, putting linen on something and a piece of needlepoint canvas on something and just have them sitting around. And say, you know, I've got an idea. I'd like to try this stitch and see what it'll look like. And just grab it and do it rather than having, you know, a project and here's my doodle cloth for that project. But I thought it was a great idea. And she just has a slate frame all set up. And when she has an idea, she just goes over to it and stitches it. And she likes it and she leaves it. You know, it becomes a sampler. And
right.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah, Royal School people have all the great ideas. but yeah, you can see that. I mean, you can see just having that sitting around, two or three scroll bars or Q-snaps or whatever, and, you know, that's just my play area, and, yeah. So anyway, I think the selvage helped. Cutting the selvage helped.
Canvas is not exactly an even weave. What happened was several years ago, I think it was maybe some designers who were doing several small pieces that were meant to be kind of a set, and discovered that in turning the canvas, some of the pieces weren't exactly the same dimensions as the original one. So then, as a result of that, everybody got the idea that you had to leave the selvage edge on. So you always knew what your right orientation of your canvas was.
That's what I was taught, is always make sure the selvage is on the left and leave it on.
If you're going to cut the selvage off, then you'd want to mark where the selvage is so that you could make sure that your pieces are in the correct orientation.
Yeah.
But again, I don't know how critical that is. If I was going to do a bunch of, let's say, 3x4 pieces, and I wanted them all to be exactly 3x4, because they're all going to go in the same frame or whatever, then I'd worry about it. But otherwise, I don't really worry about it. And it doesn't seem to really affect the stitching that much.
Yeah, I've not found that to be the case, because, you know, I'll get, if I have the selvage, then I put it to the left, because that's what I was always told was just an absolute critical thing. But then, you know, I've bought several pieces from a store, you know, cut me a 12x12 piece. And by the time I get it home, I have no idea which way the selvage was. And you just put it on and stitch, and I have never noticed a difference.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure there's a way to tell, but I can't keep the warp and the weft straight. I thought I had it one time, and then I had it backwards, and it's like, forget it. I don't care.
Exactly. And even if you do have the selvage on there, a lot of times you're going to turn the canvas to stitch anyway. You're
right.
Stitching something that repeats around, you know, the quadrants around it. I always turn it just to reach it easier instead of reaching over what I've already stitched.
Right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do that too. Yeah. You stitch upside down. You do anything. Yeah.
So then that whole kind of, you know, stitching with the warp or the weft or whatever seems like it kind of goes away. I don't know.
Yeah, it's hard to know how many of those things are just old, you know, old wives' tales type thing, or are legit. And I'm sure there's some master person out there who knows exactly why and why not. But in practical use, yeah, I just don't see that it matters much. But
and then there's going to be somebody else that says, no, that's not right.
It's so true.
And that person is a master too.
Yep. So. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. You put both of their works next to each other and they're both perfect. So, okay, whatever. Yeah. No, I don't know. I think it's an interesting discussion, and there certainly is a way to tell the warp from the weft and how it was woven, but I can't.
Yeah. You have to unravel a couple of threads, and the one that is more kinked is the warp or the weft, but I don't remember which one.
so it doesn't matter. Okay, so that's the tell then. The one that's more kinked is one or the other. Okay.
Right. And so I think, maybe I shouldn't even say this because I don't know if I'm right, but I think the weft is the threads that are parallel for the loom, and the warp are the threads that are woven through those parallel threads. So if that's correct, then the warp threads are kinked when the weft threads are switched, you know, from top to bottom.
Yeah.
I don't know. I obviously don't know anything about weaving.
Okay, so anyone listening to this, do not quote us. Do not rely on this.
But I think that's why the one thread is kinked more than the other thread. Because
mm-hmm.
as the loom threads are go up and down and are compacted against the weaving threads, that makes the weaving threads kink.
Okay.
Or maybe it's the opposite.
All right. Well, now I just grabbed this piece of canvas that I've been destroying as part of this project. So, all right. So I'm going to pull a thread out. And of course, nobody can see this, but that's all right. Okay. So that, all right, let me see the difference. All right. So I pulled that one from that side. I'm going to pull this one.
I heard that. Sounded like a zipper.
Yeah. Now, okay, so I have two, and of course I mixed them up, so I don't know which one is which. See, and I can't now. To me, there's essentially no difference. Mm-hmm. I don't see a difference. They're equally kinked.
Well, there goes that theory.
So, well, and it may, you know, who knows? But yeah, I can't sit here and tell you this one came from the left, you know, the horizontal, and this came from the vertical.
Okay.
So I don't.
I'd never tried it. That's what somebody had. Or I read someplace, yeah. Or something told me. I don't know.
Well, I've never tried it either. So now we got to get a weaver who really knows. Mm-hmm. Doggone it! Now see this stuff makes me curious.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I just now I want to know what it is. Okay, so that came. That was that way. Now I've got enough of a fringe, I don't even need to use a needle. No, I can't say there's a difference at all. Which helps underscore the thinking that it doesn't matter.
Right.
Oh, I'd be hard pressed to tell you one is different from the other. I mean, you could split a hair and make a case for one over the other, but you'd really be, no, I can't. All right, now I got to get a weaver.
and while you're doing that, you're wasting time that you could have been stitching.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've created a fringe on this piece now. Yeah, whatever. Okay.
Uh-huh.
This is getting us nowhere.
So the Weaving Guild in our city is going to do some demonstrating at the library tomorrow, and I was going to go and watch them for a little bit. So if I have a chance, I'll ask about this.
Okay. That would be great. Then we'll have from somebody who actually does it.
Yeah.
Because there is a way to tell.
Uh-huh.
There is definitely a way to tell, and a weaver could stand there and tell you exactly which way the cloth is oriented. I know that for a fact, but I can't. I've got four pieces here now, four strings that all look the same to me. So
and a nice start on a fringe.
Yes, it's a beautiful fringe. Beautiful fringe, yeah. On a canvas that I've yanked on so many different ways. Oh, well. Yeah. Yeah, okay, well, yeah, if you could find out, that would be good to know. We'll have that. Yeah, that would be great.
I'll ask.
Yeah. And now see, I got strings all over the place. Just because there were the little half, you know, the little half ones that came off too. So,
yep.
That was, you know, that was another thing I think we pointed out Wednesday night. If you've never done counted canvas or needlepoint in general, you know, if you've done a lot of cross stitch, at least for me, the first step with cross stitch is to take a skein and cut a bunch of 18-inch lengths of thread. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you're doing counted canvas stuff or needlepoint in general, don't do that. Especially if you're doing different kinds of stitches, because there's a lot of times when you're going to want a really long piece. And if you've cut them all, you're going to be really frustrated. Yeah.
You know what? Another video for you to do would be opening a skein.
Hmm.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've, you know, wound up with a big pile of knots.
Yeah.
Just because I, you know, didn't know how to open a skein along, you know, when I first started doing this. And that some skein, you know, the skeins are different.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because everybody winds them a little different, ties them together a little different. Yeah, exactly.
Twists them a little differently.
Yep.
Yeah. So that, you know, since it appears that there are a lot of people that don't have experience with counted canvas, you know, that would be another good, and it doesn't need to be a long video, but, you know, just a little quick short one to show people. And so what I like to do with watercolors is I wind the thread around the the front label, Watercolors has that little card on it that's mm-hmm. folded in half. And I learned this the hard way. You don't want to cover up the label that says what color it is.
There's pro tip number one right there.
So don't leave the card folded. Open it up and wind it around the front part of the label where it says watercolors.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's easy to pull it off however long you want. You know, if you want a short length or a longer length, you can decide as you pull it off. I have used watercolors by just opening up the skein and untwisting it and cutting it. And then you've got, you know, I don't know what it is, 24 inch lengths or something like that.
Yeah, about and, that. And yeah.
And you just stitch with it and let the colors do what they want to. But the pro tip with that is manage your colors so that you do get an even distribution.
Yeah.
And, you know, get the colors to match on opposite corners or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that requires some manipulation. And with watercolors, since there's only three strands, I think Beth mentioned this, you have to kind of look for the next place that you have the same color progression to get another strand to do your fourth quarter.
Right.
You won't have that problem because you've got four strands.
Right. If you start manipulating over dye colors, you end up with a lot of pieces that don't fit the program. But I think it's worth it. I mean, I think it's fun to figure that out and get the look you want. And if you waste a little thread, so what?
One real quick way to do that is just to pick a color and match every place that color occurs. You know, just hold it in your hand, and every place that color comes up, just put that section in your hand. Mm-hmm. And then you'll kind of get, it won't be an exact match usually for watercolors because they don't dye them evenly.
Yeah.
But it'll get you closer to finding sections that match.
Yeah. Well, and I don't get real picky. Like if I have a square and I want the corners to be dark, all I want is to be close.
Right.
You know, I want the majority of it to be dark. And if there's a little of the other colors that gets in there, that's okay, because that's all part of the transition. Mm-hmm. So I'll manipulate it to a point and then I just let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Otherwise you have to measure.
Oh,
you
yeah.
know, you have to know how long your tail is.
Oh, I know. And that's where pretty soon you just get a headache. So forget it. Yeah.
Yeah. You're wasting too much time not stitching.
Right, right. But see, now there's a difference between doing an over dye with cross stitch and an over dye with for accounted canvas work is with cross stitch, you generally make full X's so you don't get stripes.
Right.
And you know, that's kind of the rule, make full X's, and then you don't, otherwise you'll end up with stripes of some kind or lines or whatever. But when it comes to counted canvas stuff, oftentimes you want to control exactly where that color is. So then you cut the thread differently. That's why you don't just sit there and cut off a whole bunch of 18-inch lengths and say, all right, I'm ready to stitch, because... Yeah, you know, not gonna work. So.
I actually don't cut any of my threads.
No.
No. You know, if I'm doing cross stitch or, you know, it doesn't really matter. I just work off the skein or whatever.
Hmm.
Because I don't really mind not having an established length. I just pull off what I'm gonna use, and sometimes it's 18 and sometimes it's 24. You know, I just yank on the end of the skein.
just pull off a piece. now see, if I'm doing a cross stitch piece, that's part of my prep, is I'll take all of the skeins, usually silk, And I'll sit there and cut 18-inch lengths and put them in those thread drop things. Mm-hmm. And so that I have them all on a ring, they're all cut, and then off I go. But needlepoint, all that stuff goes in those, what are those bags, little sandwich bags, what are they called? I don't remember.
I don't remember either because I don't use them. I use 4x6 jewelry bags. They're Ziplocs, and I get them from Amazon. You know, here's your, I do buy things from Amazon, commercial. And I buy the a little heavier ones because they last longer. Or I get them at the big box, you know, hobby stores. And they're 4x6. The zipper lock is in the short end. So there's plenty of room to put in, you know, a couple of skeins of watercolors, or they're a little bigger than the, what the heck are those called?
Flossaway.
Flossaway, thank you.
Flossaway. Flossaways are 3x5. And I know that because I was able to reach my package of 100 that I bought. So, but now I got to write this down. So it's 4x6, what jewelry?
Jewelry bags. It, that's what they call them in the craft stores. That's not what they call them on Amazon. Just look for 4x6 zipper lock bags.
Okay.
And they have different weights. And I, like I said, I like the ones that are a little bit heavier. And then I just take a regular hole punch and punch a hole in the corner so I can put it on a ring. And that also, I never seal them really tight, but the hole also allows a little bit of air in there.
Right.
And the heavier ones hold up to moving around on the ring a little better than the lighter ones.
All right. I'm sure they're a lot cheaper than official floss away bags with the little writing square on them and blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Cause yeah, I never write on them. I just, keep the label inside.
Oh, well, so did you notice in Gayanne's instructions that she says, if you're using something different than what she said, that you should label your bags, her labels. So if you're using Bravo, you should label your bag watercolors. Because watercolors is what she says in her instructions.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mentioned that at some point because Debbie Rowley is the one, she puts a chart in every one of her charts. She puts a table that on the left column is what she has selected for her model. And then there's a place for you to put down what you choose.
Mm-hmm.
And
I do use that.
Mm-hmm.
Gayanne's instructions are a little more extended.
Yes.
So if you're going to do that, you know, it's going to take you here again. You're not stitching.
Right.
You're spending time going through the instructions, writing down. So I just put I used a different thread for one of them. I think it was for one of the Krynecs. I used a silk lamé. Or I think I'm going to use a silk lamé, but I labeled it Krynec 8 or whatever she called it, so that when she says Krynec 8, I know which one to use.
Yeah, that's your color. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. Now, you mentioned about not sealing up the bags. We had a conservator, it was a long time ago, as a guest, and learned a lot from her, but the one thing that has stuck with me and that I practice is exactly that. Do not close those Ziploc bags up all the way.
Mm-hmm.
Let them be so that air can get in.
Mm-hmm.
Because I remember her saying distinctly that was, if air can't get in and out, then that's what will deteriorate the threads.
Mm-hmm.
Is they're just all sealed up and all that plastic. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah. I always leave like an inch open all the time. Yeah.
I just pinch them in a couple of places enough so that the thread's not going to fall out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, none of my bags are fully sealed ever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because that's what she said to do. And mm-hmm. I believed her.
Yep, me too.
Because that's what she does for a living, so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah, because you think about in anyone's stash, big or small, there's an awful lot of thread that sits in drawers, in plastic bags or just in drawers, that goes for months and months and never sees the light of day or gets a breath of fresh air. And, you know, it's at some point that can't be good for it. So,
and the plastic bags do deteriorate.
Yeah.
I have some threads from, I don't know, somebody in mom's family gave her their threads that are all in floss away bags, and you can't open them anymore because the edge tears before it pulls the zipper open.
Mm.
So, you know, they just fall apart. I mean, or they deteriorate enough. I don't know if the plasticizer goes away in them or what.
Yeah. That's what it is. Yeah. That's what makes it come apart. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the plastic just fails. Yeah. And then you have to cut them open or, you know, pull from the sides of the bag to get the zipper to come open.
Yeah.
To get the thread out.
And see, and that's the part right there, the plasticizer leaching out of the plastic. And if it's all sealed up, that it's, you know, there's your thread right next to it. And so, yeah, that's why you got to get some air in there. Yep.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, it does. Unfortunately, plastic doesn't biodegrade, but it does after a while. Yeah, it loses its flexibility. Yep.
Yeah.
We really should come up with something other than plastic bags, but they're useful. So,
well, I mean, there's wax paper and paper bags and all that other kind of stuff, but they really aren't very useful for us.
No, got to see the stuff.
Right. And there's not a good way to secure those, like the zip lock.
Right. Yep.
Yeah, they're just useful.
So, and we're Americans, and darn it, we're just going to use them.
Yeah.
But yeah, you mentioned about opening up a skein. Yeah, that, you know, you got me thinking. That would be a good video. How do you get these skeins open so you get the master hoop of thread without it being all tangled in a knot? And yeah, I mean, I'm pretty careful, and I get out a couple laying tools to insert into where the hoop is so you don't get threads across the way. And
or put it around the back of a chair.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, another thing that you might do that I find a lot of people don't know is how to take their threads apart. You know, so you've got three threads or four threads or six strands. And, you know, I see people just kind of pull them apart and then they've got a big knot. Do you take the end and tap it?
Yep.
Yeah. And then pull it straight up.
Yep.
When I demonstrate that for people, even who people have been stitching for a long time, it's like, oh.
Yeah. Cause if you pull them from the side, like you're breaking a wishbone. Yeah. Instant knot. And six strands, yeah, you might get one out, but the rest will just all be so knotted up, you'll just throw it away. Yeah. Yeah. No, I tap the end, pull out straight, hold the rest, and then it'll all drop back down and be straight again. Oh, yeah, you bet. Yep.
Yeah. Good demonstration.
Yep. Yeah, that's something that we forget, is that there's always new people or people who have never been shown. And, you know, I wonder how many people have gotten frustrated with needlework simply because every time they needed a new strand, it was a hassle.
Mm-hmm. So we taught a beginning cross stitch class at the library here last week and had 18 people in it, which was pretty good.
Yeah.
And one of the women came in and said, you know, I know how to cross stitch. I just came because I've just moved back to town and I just kind of want to, you know, get to know some people. So she sat down and started to do the stitching anyway. And, that was something she didn't know about. She didn't know about pulling the thread straight up. Because I saw her starting to just separate the threads by pulling them apart. So I said, hang on just a minute. I'll give you a tip for pulling your threads out. And she told us afterwards, she said that, you know, she hadn't stitched for quite a while, but she'd learned something.
Yeah.
So
yep.
I've gotten that same reaction before with EGA members. You know, people that have been stitching for a long time, they just didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know it either until somebody in a class showed me.
Well, yeah, and how many people have never been in a class, have just stitched by themselves all along, and you know, they figure out what works for them, and just simply have no idea that there might be a better way. Right. And, you know, they just merrily go on through life, and then one day it's like, holy smokes, it could be easier. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. There's always something to learn. Yeah. Well, it's like this. You know, I mounted several pieces of canvas in my life, and I never thought about cutting the salvage off.
And, no, me either.
You know, the other night when I forget who it was that mentioned that, was it Kathy or I forget who it was, you know, cut the salvage off and the light went on. Well, yeah, then all the threads can relax. Why not?
Mm-hmm. And they were saying that with respect to linen, which I'd never heard that with respect to linen. I never bother with linen.
No.
But, yeah, why wouldn't it be the same for canvas?
Right. Yeah, linen, I just get it mounted reasonably close and square, and because, I mean, there's so much flexibility there, I don't worry about it. But
right.
Canvas is, you know, so stiff, yeah. And mm-hmm. that's going to be interesting, this Congress cloth linen that Kathy got that I'm going to use. It's literally linen.
Mm-hmm.
There's no stiffness. It's a 24 count linen. So, because I was expecting some stiffness to it, but no, not really.
It really drapes.
Yeah, I was surprised. So now, you know, that it becomes a different experience.
So I wonder, and you might experiment with this on the edge somewhere, with normal Congress cloth, if you put a needle in it or a pin in it, you are stuck with that hole. It doesn't go away.
Right.
I don't know if yours will be that way, because it seemed a little more open.
Yeah, that's...
Congress cloth.
No, it's linen. Here, I'm sticking a needle in it right now. I think this is maybe a 24. Uh-huh. I just grabbed a needle. No, this is linen. Yeah, no, it's not like regular Congress cloth where that you put a needle in and that big gaping hole sits there and never budges. Mm-hmm. No, this just, it just closes right back up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to stitch on.
Yeah, yeah. I'm most curious to see how it behaves. But now, you know, I was going to mount it on stretcher bars, but I don't think I'm going to. I think I might just put it on Q-snaps. I don't have any scroll bars this small, so I think I might just put it on Q-snaps.
Mm-hmm.
But
that should work.
Yeah. No, this doesn't, this is not normal Congress cloth behavior at all, no. Nope. Yeah, I just poked a whole bunch of holes. You can't even find them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so yeah, it'll be interesting. It's beautiful cloth.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the things we learn.
Yeah, there's always something new. Or, you know, a lot of people will say, "Oh, that's a beginner class. I'm beyond that." But I found that taking beginner classes, if I like the pattern, I'll take a class that's a beginner. I don't really care what level of class is. If I like the pattern and the teacher, then I'll take the class. I always learn something, or I'm reminded about something that I knew that I'd forgotten.
Uh-huh. Yep.
You know, you just learn things.
Yeah, don't walk into those rooms all cocky and all knowing. Because you're going to walk out with a different something every time. Yep. And that's part of it, too, is in those classes, whether it's your classmates or the teacher. That can be, you know, and I've not done a lot of classes. I just don't enjoy them. I just rather stitch by myself, but that's just me. But, you know, there's, as a former teacher, you know, there's constructive ways to help people and be encouraging. And, you know, that to me, that's your successful class environment, is if everything is constructive and helpful, and you see someone struggling and, you know, can I offer you something as a suggestion, or, you know, there's ways to do that without being condescending and flat out rude. And, you know, it really is important in those things, because then everybody walks out feeling better about things.
Yeah, I've taken a lot of classes, and there I've had some instructors that were, I don't want to say mean, but very little patience mm-hmm. with people. You know, I said this was an advanced class. Oh. You're not an advanced stitcher. Ooh. You know, what are you doing? I mean, not those words, but it comes across.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the first EGA seminar that I went to, I had only done surface embroidery and cross stitch. And because I signed up late, I didn't have a lot of choice in the classes that I got into. And both of them were, I don't know, intermediate to advanced classes. And I didn't tell the instructor that I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
But I had enough experience in using a needle and thread that, you know, I don't know that either one of them could tell that I didn't know what I was doing.
Right. Yeah. No, I learned that because my first teaching job was sixth graders.
Oh, boy.
Are really just older elementary kids. And, uh-huh. and I learned quickly how much you can hurt people's feelings, because, you know, the first couple of kids I had, you know, I just didn't approach it right. And, oh, I could just tell I did damage that was probably gonna stick with them for a long time. And mm-hmm. those first couple of weeks, you know, I had a come to Jesus thoughts in the evening. You know, I gotta take a better tact with these kids, because you can't just come at them blunt. You know, they gotta feel like they've got a chance and that they're encouraged. And mm-hmm. yeah, I'm sure there were a couple of kids that, you know, oh, I remember that teacher. Oh, you know, because you always remember those things long after. Those ugly moments. And yeah, that for me, that was rookie teacher. Yeah. You gotta think these things through before you address a kid who is doing something incorrect, even misbehavior. Mm-hmm. you know, there's ways to handle that so that, they come out of it saving face. And, mm-hmm. Yeah, there was one kid, it was a high school class. And we got, it was science is what I taught. And we got new tables and new stools. They were, you know, they were lab tables. And we finally got rid of the desks. And so we got tables and lab stools. Well, the lab stools swiveled and were on wheels because, you know, well, yeah, exactly. And which, you know, for lab situations and for working in teams, you needed that. And mm-hmm. I wanted wheels because I didn't want scraping legs all over, tearing up the floor, you know? Well, mm-hmm. the first few weeks, you had to teach the kids, all right, yeah, they turn and they roll. Stop it, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was freshman biology was the worst because, you know, freshman, yeah. Mm-hmm. but I had one young man who he was just a pain, and a lot of times he was just being a pain just because he could. And I finally stopped class, and I made him get off of his stool, and I made him sit on the floor.
Oh.
I should have never done that. I've felt terrible about that ever since, and it's been a lot of years since I did that. And, you know, he's a high school freshman, but, you know, he's a teenager. They're so unsure. I should have never done that. But I could not get him to stop from rolling around and spinning around while I was trying to teach a class. But, oh, that was such a wrong thing to do. And, you know, and you know, I did not do him any good. And, you know, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, you know, it's those kinds of things that, and with kids, you know, it shows up immediately, you know, that you didn't do it right. And, yeah, that one always sticks with me. But yeah, there's being constructive in a classroom environment is just so, it's so critical. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and you know, if nothing else, you might just make the person not want to do the project.
Right. Oh, I lost the kid. I lost the kid for the rest of the year. Yep.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And probably any interest that he might have had in biology.
Yep. Yep. I lost him. And I took great pride in kids that struggled to learn. I took, you know, or were just troublemakers. I mean, I had more than one teacher come to me. How come you never have trouble with so-and-so? And my response is, well, I treat them like adults. Mm-hmm. And treat them with respect, and I get it back. And so, you know, I don't know what you're doing in your classroom, but that's how I go about it. But I lost that kid. I lost him completely. And, yeah, you're right. You know, maybe lost someone who could have made a career out of science just with that one move. But, man, stop spinning and rolling. You know, it just just caught me at the wrong time. And, you know, and I made him sit on the floor the rest of the class, and that picture pops up in my head every now and then, that kid sitting down there. And it's, and you know, and as a teacher, you know, adults are just older kids, you know, and they all have the same reaction. They might hide it better, but
Well, and then they're going to go out and they're going to tell their friends, you know, don't take a class with that person. She's mean.
Right. Right.
You know, or she was, you know, dismissive of me, or you know, whatever it happens to be.
Yep.
You know, that's the hard part about teaching anything. You know, I've never been a teacher, but I've taught a lot of classes in different things, and you always have people of different levels, and you have to do your best to meet all those levels.
Yep.
You know, so you have to balance between the people that can't thread a needle and the people that are already stitching.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's a difficult balance to reach. And I think what we learned for the cross stitch class is I had somebody helping me. I needed another helper.
Mm-hmm.
And actually the librarian that was manages the adult stuff was also helping. So it, you need a lot of individual attention for that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So the next time I do it, we couldn't control the class size, and we'd had some kids, which was a mistake on the part of the library. It was supposed to be adults. But that's okay. You know, we worked through them, and the little kids got a needle and some thread, and they just made stitches and had fun while their older sisters actually worked on the project.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the next time we do it, we're limiting it to 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll see if I can get two people to help so that, you know, we can give people the attention that they need to get started.
Oh, that's so critical. Yeah. When you hear about, and we do these days, this is that time of year when teachers are on strike or complaining. And one of the things that comes up is class size. And to someone who's never taught, you think, well, what's the big deal about that? You know, I mean, how many chairs are there in the classroom? Can't you add two more? And it really doesn't have, well, that's a factor because kids are armpit to elbow, but that isn't the only factor. It's just what you described. There's so many that you as one individual can't make sure that everyone has success in any given class.
Right.
You just can't get to them all. It's just not possible.
Right.
And it's class size so critical. You know, why is this needlework class limited to 10 people? Well, yes, because otherwise everybody gets frustrated because at any given time you might need help and you can't get it. And there you're sitting waiting. Yeah.
Right. Right.
Yeah. No, it's there's a lot more to it than just how many seats you can fill and how much money you can take in for the fee. It doesn't, at some point, none of that matters because the enjoyment of the class deteriorates. And
Well, and it's, you know, it's not just standing and lecturing. Oh, I mean, it's never is with needlework, but with other kinds of things, you know, that's how I grew up. It, you know, somebody at the front of the class stood there and lectured. That was the way it was all through grade school, high school, college. You know, that's how old I am.
Yeah.
and it's not, it's not that way anymore, but that, you know, that's kind of, I have to work hard to not do that.
Yeah.
Because that's what I know.
Yep. Oh yeah.
And no, that doesn't, people don't learn that way.
No. Yeah. You know, the people, some people learn by watching, some by doing, and some by listening. And yeah, you got to provide that so that everyone can learn. And, oh yeah, no, when I was teaching high school science, you know, the days that I had to lecture, because there was no other effective way to provide the information, you know, I would warn them the day before, you know, bring your notebooks tomorrow because we got a lecture and you're going to make notes. And, you know, and you just go, oh, the kids just go, oh, I'm sorry, you know, but I tried to keep that to a minimum for that very reason. You know, it's so much more effective if I can give them a little intro. All right, now here's how we're going to go about it. Pick a partner and get to work. And then I walk around the room helping people who are struggling, and then everybody gains. And
I don't know that, I mean, I don't know this for sure, because I don't have any, I don't know anybody that's in high school in science, but I know that schools have gotten away from chemistry experiments because of the hazards with the chemicals. But man, that lit so many people up to chemistry.
Yep.
To, you know, to put two things together and see them change color or, you know, whatever.
Yep.
You know, I think they do micro labs now where they're using much smaller quantities, but it can't be the same.
No, no.
And I don't know what they're doing in biology. well, but I mean, we dissected frogs, you know, and stuff like that. But then you have to worry about the formaldehyde exposure. And
yeah. No, I had, you know, here telling teaching stories, but when I was teaching, the internet and laptop computers were really just starting to become a useful tool in school. Mm-hmm. But I would not give up dissecting.
Mm-hmm.
And there were early programs that you could do the dissection online. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't give it up because it's not the same. I don't care how many times you do it. It's not the same, and you don't have the same experience and learn what, you know, tissue, animal tissue is like and how it's put together. Mm-hmm. And I had one young lady who wanted, wanted to be a nurse. Okay. Wanted to be a nurse. Her dad was on the school board.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't want to dissect because it was cruel.
No.
And I said, no, you're going to dissect. You're going to do this. Now, if you want to have your lab partner do the actual scalpel work, that's fine. But you are going to be there and you are going to dissect. And of course, then daddy, he's making me. And so then meeting with the principal and the school board member. Mm-hmm. And it was a district where school board members got on the school board till their kids got out of school just so they could, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was really kind of in a position where I could walk out the door, and I was a science teacher, and they, you know, finding science teachers even then was tough. And so they couldn't have me walk out the door. And I just told him, I said, look, she does not have to touch anything, but she has to be there and she has to take the test, which is walking around and identifying parts in dissected animals. I said, that's part of biology, and your daughter wants to become a nurse. And if dissecting bothers her, then she better find another career path, because the real world is a whole lot more. And
yeah.
Yeah. I could never sync those two up. But, he was just a pain. And I said, well, that's the way it is. And the principal knew that, you know, I'll just walk out. I can find a teaching job, science teaching job in a lot of places anytime. So,
right.
So I made her do it. And of course she was, you know, mad at me and whatever. And I've often wondered if she actually became a nurse or if I did her a service and she decided it wasn't for her. I don't know. But, yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when you get into college and you have to do anatomy and physiology, right. You know, you dissect way worse than a frog.
Yep. Yep. Exactly. Yeah. No, I'll never forget the day we all went into a lab and got to see a cadaver.
Uh-huh.
Holy smokes. That was something, you know, okay. And we didn't get, you know, legally we couldn't do anything. You could just look and have things demonstrated, but mm-hmm. you know, just completely eye opening, mind blowing. And, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. Teaching. Yeah.
Yeah.
People, all you teachers, you know, you get the summer off, blah, blah, blah. Don't talk to me until you've taught a full load of classes for an entire year. Then you come talk to me about teaching. I don't want to hear about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Do not want to hear about it.
Yep.
You're on basketball supervision duty, sitting on the top of the bleachers with stacks of papers on either side of you, grading them because you got to be on duty. Yeah, don't talk to me about it. I don't want to hear it. Yep. Yep. All right. Now here we are, an hour and 20 minutes. Okay, we got to stop. Darn it.
Yeah.
I didn't realize.
Well, you know, you get a couple of science nerds together and sooner or later.
Yeah, it's going to happen. Okay.
Yeah, it's probably amazing it hasn't happened before this, actually.
I'm thinking so, yes. Yep. All right. No Stitch Hour tonight. David McCaskill on Sunday. What a hoot. That was so much fun. What a tremendous guy. Then we'll be back with the Stitch Hour next Wednesday. And thanks for listening.
Bye.